Being here this evening. I wanted to begin by reading two poems. I find that the work of centuries and the distillation of the great thoughts, particularly through the mystical line of energy, through many different points of view, not just one point of view, but many points of view. And that's one reason why I love this book, because it traverses several centuries, and it encompasses many belief systems. And so it speaks, I think, eloquently. Troubled? Then stay with me, for I am not. Come on in. I'll wait until you're seated. Hey, pull up a chair. We've got a nice little circle today. And if more come, we'll just carry on. Okay, I'll start again. Troubled? Then stay with me, for I am not. Lonely? 1,000 naked amorous ones dwell in the ancient caves beneath my eyelids. Riches? Here's a pick. My whole body is an emerald that begs, take me. Write all your worries on a piece of parchment, and offer it to God. Even from the distance of a millennium, I can lean the flame in my heart into your life and turn all that frightens you into holy incense ash. Now, for us to be so willing to let go of anything that troubles us or makes us lonely or we feel we lack, and to be able to say, we have all of that. Everyone has it in a different form, you see. But each of us has great riches, and sometimes we forget just the wealth of the consciousness that we carry. So beautiful.
The author.
Excuse me?
The author.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have to turn the page. It was Hafez. Hafez was is an amazing poet. And much of his work was lost, as happens with many of these individuals. And he was born and lived between 1320 and 1389, and he is the most beloved of the Persian poets. Hey, come on in, pull in the chair.
Thank you. Nice and warm in here.
Yes, I just had the heat on because it was so cold when we got here, but hopefully it'll be comfortable as we go along. Welcome.
Thank you.
And this one is another one of my favorites. This is St. Francis of Assisi. Joy is the greatest cleanser. It is the greatest testimony to our faith. Toil with happiness, my Lord once said to me. God sent a servant on an errand through a dangerous part of the world. The servant, having received in hand what God wanted delivered, turned to the holy and said, my beloved master, do you have a final instruction? And God replied, a kind face is a precious gift. So for all of us who are in the world, which we are fully, but who also occupy the world of the formless, who come both in form and formlessness to every experience that we have in our lives. And often we forget the formless because the form is so powerfully seductive and our attachments to it are so powerful that often we say, oh, this is going to be so hard, or I don't really want to do that, or why am I doing this? And often what has come unto us to do is more about the being than the doing, as we have discussed before, that it is through our being that we really become truly one in the service that we've come to do. And each of us has a different service. And when I first began to realize, and the divine said to me, it's not about doing, it's about being. And I had to really kind of work with that, because I'd grown up in a family where your worthiness, your value, was in how much you did, and that you had to do it in a certain way in order for the value to be deeply appreciated. Does anyone have a familiarity with this? All right. So I then acknowledged, okay, if I want to experience this appreciation, then I have to put my undivided attention on the doing that has been given me to do. And if it came up less, which it often did, then I would be admonished and told, here's the way it's got to be. And then I would do the task again to meet that particular standard or whatever that happened to be. So I became dutiful, and I also began to create a level of kind of perfectionism that was really not healthy, because I realized that I was trying to do it to meet someone else's standard, and yet there wasn't any part of me in my being, in my love, to want to do it. So I was torn between how I will serve in doing, and can I have joy in that doing? Can I have love in that doing? How do I find that? Because I had not been taught that. I had not known how to create the doing and the being and how to encompass that in love. Oh boy. So I set myself that task. And because my mystical experiences began as a young child, the voice within would be speaking to me while I would be doing a particular task, and I would try to align myself to how may I lovingly open to this task, even when it was very, very hard for me to do. And I'll give you an example and what happened later. My younger sister was very ill, and we children, the other siblings, had to take care of her. And it was very difficult, and it was beyond our age to know how to do what we had to do, but we learned how to do it. And time passed, and eventually, many years later, I'm in my 30s, and this particular sister and I are going to be traveling. I am working with the United States ice skating team, and we're going to be going to Copenhagen. So she wanted to come and see this competition, world competition, and I said, I think that'd be great. And we got to the hotel, and the next morning before I went to go to work in the ice skating rink, she became very ill. And I thought, oh Lord, here we are in Copenhagen, and I've got to go to the rink, but I've got to stay here because my duty is here, but my work is there, and my duty is there, and you don't even feel so torn. And at that moment, the divine is so incredible. At that moment, there's a knock on the door. And I open it, and the woman is there to clean the room. And I said, you know, my sister is very ill, and I'm here to do this job, and, you know, I'm torn. And she turned to me, and she said, I came from Estonia, and I was a registered nurse there. And when I came to Copenhagen, the only job I could get was changing the sheets of the bed. She said, I know exactly, I'm covered with goosebumps, I know exactly what to do for your sister. And she walked in the room and you could just see her mastery. She just knew exactly what to do and how to do everything for my sister. It was just so beautiful. And her love of what she was doing. And my sister's name is Margaret, and Margaret was just, she said, oh, Mary, you can leave now. I'm in really good hands. You know, and I went, oh, Lord, thank you so much. So I called down the front desk, and I said, do you have a doctor on call? And they said, yes, but he won't be here for about an hour because he's doing, you know. We said, no problem, you know. And she called down, and she said, you know, I'm taking care of this young woman, and everything will be fine until the doctor gets here. And I said, okay, I'm going to go do my job. I'll be back. So I did, and when I came back, the doctor had arrived, and Margaret got her medicine, and, you know, this extraordinary angel that just knocked on the door. She said, because I was trained in this country, they don't accept my credentials in this country. And so to be able to serve in this way is so loving. So I acknowledged in that moment how, as a child, I had been unable to do it perfectly, but I had done the best I knew how. And here I am, all these years later, faced with, again, what could have been a real crisis, and the angel appeared so that it could be done not because I had to do it perfectly, but because it was her joy, her love, and her vocation, what she had trained to do, to come into the room and do this extraordinary thing. And I said, what a blessing. And so I then said to the divine, I see that the nature of being has many forms and comes in many ways into our lives. And it is for us to be able to know when being has arrived, all right? And to be sensitive to that, and when the being within us is called forth. Because we're all, I mean, everyone in this room is a consummate doer. Would you agree with that? Yes. Nod your heads up and down. Yes? Okay. I mean, we're masters of doing. You give us a job, ba-ba-ba-boom, you know, faster than a speeding bullet, it's done. Because that's the nature of how our culture has raised us, and the transgenerational energy pattern of doing has come through practically every country in the world, where the first thing you had to do was learn how to plant the seed, to grow the crop, to eat the food, to live so you could plant the seed and grow the crop and eat the food. You know, the doing of survival was absolutely paramount for all of our ancestors from way back when. And then when that ceased to be that, and, you know, the invention of the steam engine and the wheel and all the other things that came along, then the doing became a whole other level. It wasn't necessarily for survival. It became the doing of other things, which also is very important, and yet at the same time, for us to remember that the being which we are is of the most profound concern to us. And often in our forgetfulness, in our doing, we say, oh, I'll wait and do that later, the being part of who we are. And I can remember as a child when I first learned prayer. And the first prayer I learned was, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Now I remember that because it was so deeply true in my being. And I didn't learn the Lord's Prayer until sometime later, but that prayer was like my touchstone, how I first knew about being and how I could be with my soul. How could I do that? That was a question. Even as a child, I'd say, you know, I mean, I would ask my parents that question, and they would say, we have too much to do, we can't talk about that now, you know, and off we go into doing. So I honor that in my own journey into being and touching it and loving it and nurturing it was through my soul. And my deep appreciation that that prayer had given me that word soul, because I did not hear it in my family entity. I did not. I didn't hear it when I went to church. Nobody talked about soul in church. Talked about a lot of other things, but they didn't talk about that. And so I just held that thread for a very long time. And then when we got our first dog, and I would look at this dog, and I thought, that dog is just soul, just pure soul, just pure love, just couldn't wait to be there and held and nurtured and taken care of and just, you know, and it didn't do much, you know. The dog would, you know, jump around and piddle and sniff and do whatever it did and just be love, pure love. And I would watch that and I'd think, how does a dog do that? I want to learn how to do that. I want to learn how to just be in that presence. And I say some of the greatest teachers that I've ever had have been the animals that have been in my life. Would you agree with that? If you ever have an animal, you can't even imagine. That love is just so incredible. So those were my first teachers of love and deep appreciation. And when I was sad, I would go to be with whatever dog we had at that time. And that dog knew that I was sad, and would lick my face and curl up and be so gentle and kind to me. And it was so healing because the doing that was necessary was all-consuming. And so it couldn't be for my parents to be that consoling energy, but this dog was. And the same would be true of so many different parts of aspects of life. And throughout my life, I've been very blessed that animals have come into my life to continually remind me, don't forget about the being, Mary, don't forget about the being. And when I began to dance, I would say to myself, I want to be able to communicate to my dancers how the nature of being influences how they move, so that the movement that we would create wouldn't be, because dancers do, I mean, that's what they do on stage, they move their bodies and they dance, but behind that is the being. And I said, I want that being to come through so powerfully that the audience will acknowledge perhaps the choreography and enjoy it very much, but afterwards, I'd like them to talk about how they felt. How did they feel watching that ballet? How did they feel when they were touched by a piece that we choreographed? How did that performance in terms of being, and we won't talk about that, but they will communicate. If we've done our work, they won't necessarily think about the choreography, but how it touched them, right? Just as that wonderful nurse knocked on the door at that very moment. It wasn't about what she could do, it was about her being, but her doing was profoundly in alignment with her being. So I honor that as each of us goes into our world, we often have the opportunity of being present with another in a very different way. And it used to be that I would go to do something to get the job done as quickly as possible. Go in, you know, like, let's say dry cleaning. Go into the dry cleaner, here's my ticket, get the clothes, thank you very much, here's the money, I'm gone. And I realized that that was just a lot of doing. But where was the being in that transaction? Where was my being in relationship to what that was? So I'd have to say, okay, next time I go, and I go into the laundromat or wherever it was, I am going to pay attention to being. And I want to find out how my being will express when I go in to get my dry cleaning. So, and I was in New York at the time, and New Yorkers are not known for being, while they're doing, they're pretty much doing. I said, okay, this is really going to be good, Mary. You're going to get to really work this out. So I walked in and I said, good morning. I'm here to get my laundry. Thank you very much. There's just nothing here, and just me, you know, I'm just really trying to eye contact, and you know, New Yorkers, we do not do a lot of eye contact, okay? So we do the exchange, and then I say, thank you very much, and I, again, eye contact, and just like, you know, just a little looking, like, oh, she's not a New Yorker, obviously, with my accent. So little by little, I developed a relationship, little by little. Little by little, as I say, in the inchworm fashion, I just very quietly brought the being into the doing. And then, when the relationship began to blossom, we talked about her children and her grandchildren and her, you know, I mean, she was just so ready to have someone appreciate who she was beyond the job. But because of the vulnerability that that would create, it was for me to create my vulnerability, then she could create her vulnerability, and then we could have that exchange. I have found in my life, and perhaps you have too, that wherever I am, and Rumi says this best, he says, wherever you are, wherever you stand, be the soul of that place. Now, if you really think about that, think of all the places you are during the day. And even when you're in your car driving from point A to point B, are we being the soul of that journey in our car from point A to point B? And what would that feel like? And how do we change what's happening inside us? It used to be that I just get in my car and go, the destination is, right? Nothing was happening in between except getting to the destination. And, you know, my ego conscious mind would be telling me a story, or, you know, I'd be listening to music or whatever. And then the divine said to me, let's not have any more music. And let's not have any more ego, conscious mind, talk, talk, talk. Let's just be in the journey, moving from here to there, and let's see what the being would feel like within if we just allowed the being to be on this journey and see what would happen. And I was enthralled. I said, I don't even know what it's going to feel like or look like, but I'm willing to experience this. I want to experience what this is. So indeed, that began to happen. And as I would journey, even though there was traffic and all sorts of things, I was still holding the being within myself as I was journeying down the road. And I became aware of how I was moving through time and space in a very different way, because my being was ever present as I was moving forward. And at arrival, I was quite refreshed, rather than being harried by the traffic or the, you know, whatever is happening around us when we're in cars traveling from point A to point B. And I would then get out of my car and I would think, oh, that was really delicious. I had a really good time driving from here to there. And usually it hasn't been fun. It has always been dedicated to the doing that I had to do, that I was either leaving the doing or going to the new doing. Right? This is, I mean, you know, look at how our lives have just been so compartmentalized, and who we really want to be is a whole level of energy that is completely present and within us. And all we have to do is say, let's see how that feels. And allow ourselves to let go enough that the being can be. And often when I am, wherever I arrive, I remember what Rumi has said, be the soul of this place. Wherever you are, be the soul of that place. And that immediately brings me right into that level of energy where I want to go, okay, this moment. And if something pulls me back into, you know, the jabber, the little chat in the mind, I'm able to say, that's perfectly all right. This can be going on now because I know exactly why I'm here and why I'm going from this place to this place. And it changes for me why, the why of why am I doing what I'm doing. Most of us have service in our lives, do we not? We have things that we have said, this is how I serve, this is my joy. I serve in these various ways throughout my day. And I now am very clear that for me, yes, there are ways that I serve in doing, but until the being is really profoundly present, then the doing is about something else entirely. Once we allow the being to come together with the doing, then whatever it is that is our service, something else is really going on. And it is very beautiful and very expansive and beyond the form of what we are doing. When we're in the nature of our being and we do whatever we're doing, the expansion of the energy is enormous. And we don't have to worry about where that energy goes or what it's going to do, because it is just pure love, pure love. The being is who we are as soul. The being is that divine consciousness, which is all soul, which is us. We don't have to go find our soul. We don't have to ask our soul, where are you? It's always here. Now, to be one with our soul means another aspect of energy altogether. It means that we are willing, on a very deep level, to listen to that still, small voice within. And to listen and listen and listen. And in that listening, something very profound begins to happen. Instead of having to listen, we then hear, we hear, we hear, we hear. And there's a difference when you're listening and when you're hearing what is coming in. And often our hearts are the way into that energy field. I used to think, well, if I think about it enough, it'll happen. It didn't happen. I'm going to do my service, that's when it'll happen. Didn't happen. I did my service, but it didn't happen. It's when I felt that I could just come into my heart and be quiet there, quiet. And the divine said to me, there awaits in your heart that which you seek. It awaits in your heart that which you seek. So I said, all right, I want to then come into my heart and stay here. And our hearts are enormous, darlings. They're huge. They aren't just this little thing right here, okay? This is the start. This is the starting point, and then it goes out from there. The energy field of your heart is 50 times greater than the energy field of your mind. I want to repeat that. The energy field of your heart is 50 times greater than the energy field of your mind. Most people think this has got the energy field. No, 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 no. They have hooked people up, and they said this goes bzzz, and this goes bzzz, you know, 50 times greater. So that means in this room right now, if we multiplied the 50 times greater of our hearts, can you imagine the energy field that's sitting in this room? And all of us are sitting here going, oh. Of course we do, because we don't even recognize and sometimes even feel what that is. But it's operating even when we don't put our attention upon it. This 50 times energy field is continually expanding out of us and going into every single molecule and atom that there is. I mean, can you imagine living your life every single day for as long as you're on the planet with the knowing that even if the person that you're with is, and I'm saying sound asleep, do you know what I mean when I say sound asleep? They have no awareness of anything that I've just spoken. That doesn't make any difference. Their heart's still doing it because that's what the heart knows how to do. So if we line up and say, I know that my heart is expanding 50 times greater than my mind, my goodness gracious. So doesn't that mean that wherever we are, our service is to acknowledge that every single person we meet, their heart is 50 times that energy? And even if they don't have any awareness, it doesn't make any difference. It's we who have the awareness. We are the soul of that place. And you put all that together, and we're just like these, you know, little atom bombs that are going, but we're not bombing, we're expanding our consciousness. So you have to look at what's really going on in terms of how you individually feel when you move into your heart and how that energy expresses through you. Because each one of us, it expresses very differently. That's what makes being in human form so interesting. I mean, what's one thing you love?
Animals. What do I like?
What do you love? Not like. What do you love?
Exercise.
My kids. Your kids.
Animals.
Animals.
Walking on the beach.
Walking on the beach. I'm with you.
Babies.
Okay, and mine is just all that is. I'm just all that is all the time. So when you think about what you love and how you've come to love it, how did that love come to you? How did you receive it? How did you experience it? What was the first time that you walked on the beach and you said, I love this, you know? I mean, I'm a water baby. The first time I was ever in water, and I was grew up in South America, and it was wartime, and I had these huge fevers. And the doctor came and said to my mother, there is no medicine. There is nothing we can do for your daughter. You know, I'm just a little baby. What you have to do is put her in cool water and hold her there and hope that her temperature goes down. So my mother would dutifully put me in the cool water and just hold me there. And, you know, I was just screaming at the top of my lungs, and I had this huge, terrible fever. And little by little, it would go down. It wouldn't disappear. And every day, this would be the ritual. So, of course, I adore water. Not only that, but in my astrological chart, I also love water. But that sense of being in the water. And when I was on the road, I would say to the people who would hire me to do work for them, choreography, I'd say, I have to, even if you put me in the sleaziest motel on the strip, I don't care, as long as there's a bathtub. I said, I have to submerge myself every day in water. I have to do that in order to get up the next day and work for 12 hours straight with many, many, many young people that I was working with. And then I go and I submerge myself in this water. And that gets me ready for the next day. So each of us has found a way, hopefully, where we can renew ourselves, and part of it is that we do what we love, yes, whatever that happens to be, that brings that love to us, And in so doing, then what happens? The being which we are emanates through whatever we do. So whatever the doing is, and I don't care if you have an office job or if you're a teacher or a homemaker or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. When that being can come through the doing, then something so rich and so beautiful begins to happen. And my experience of myself was, and I can show it to you in a graphic way, the first time I got to New York, the first year I was there, honey, I just worked my ass off. I worked so hard. And I'd show up and we had to choreograph pieces and do all this kind of amazing stuff, and it was just exhausting. And I was living in a five-story walk-up with five other women, and it was bedlam. And I would be up choreographing the piece for the next day. And all these women, they were, two of them were stewardesses, and the rest of them were businesswomen. And all of us were just living on no money, so that's why we were all smushed into this, you know, little apartment. And they'd say, what is that you're doing? I said, well, this is my assignment for tomorrow. They'd go, you got to be kidding. And I'd say, no. Wait, let me show you from the beginning. So I would do, you know, my little thing. And they'd go, oh. And I thought, you know, I'm a complete failure. But that's all right. Go to the studio the next day, you know, and I'd have my little snippet ready, you know, however long. It had to be a minute long. And I, you know, we'd have to do it on stage because we were at the Henry Street Playhouse and they had a beautiful stage there, and we have to do it on stage. And Alan Nikolai, who's the gentleman I danced with, he would critique, and he was a very strong critiquer. I mean, if he didn't like it, he'd say, off the stage. Go like this, you know, creep off the stage. But I would just produce and produce and produce and produce. And the being was not there. I was doing the doing, but the being was not there. And one day I sat down with myself and I said, Mary, you've got to stop just creating movement to fulfill the assignment. You have to let this arise from your being. So I would just sit. And sometimes the assignment would be circular, angular, temperature. I mean, just one word, and you would have to create a piece around that. And I was going, temperature, okay, I could do temperature. I'd just freak out. But then I'd say, wait a minute, what is the being of temperature? And I thought, I know what it's like to be hot. I mean, growing up below the equator, it's hot in Brazil. And I knew what it was to be lethargic and so hot. And you thought, I don't even think I can raise my arm, it's so hot. And I thought, okay, so if I'm really, really hot, how do I raise my arm in that kind of lethargy that's just, you know, your arm weighs a ton, and you just have to lift it, you just have to lift it up, you know, and I just get my whole body into it. And I think, okay, that's what I'm gonna do tomorrow. And I get on stage, and the thing would be, you know, temperature. And you couldn't tell what you were doing. You just had to do it, and then they had to pretty much guess, did you solve the problem or not? And it was a breakthrough for me, because now I came from being. And as I started not totally reclining on the floor, but enough so that you could see that everything else was limp, and I was having to really effort to lift through the heat. You know, that lethargy of just, you just don't even think you can move another muscle. And it was successful. And I thought, okay, so no matter what it is, come from the being first. So as I began to move in my life, I'd say, all right, how can I move with my being in my life? Having the doing that I have to do, but how shall I bring my soul into that? How shall I allow that to be what guides me, rather than, here's the next thing I have to do, the agenda. I always have an agenda. The night before, because I'm a choreographer, the night before, I look at the choreography of the next day. I don't know about y'all, but I say, all right, choreography starts here, and here's, and then I get to eat, and then, you know, I choreograph the whole thing. So, I had a dancer, one of my dancers, here in town. And she was very frustrated because she said, Mary, my days are so full and I never get it done and I'm just so frustrated and I'm very unhappy about it. And I said, guess what I do? I said, you know, I choreograph my day like a dance. And her eyes got big and she said, you do what? I said, I choreograph my day like a dance. And I want to be sure that it has the balance, you know? It has that flow of a good piece of choreography. And she said, I never thought about that. I said, well, darling, you've only been a dancer for 25 years, and you choreograph in the studio, but you don't bring that into your life. Well, the same way with being. We don't use the being in our everyday life. We don't take that which is our true nature, and very often we don't bring it into that which is before us to do. So, she is now choreographing her day. And we talked last week. I said, so, how's your day going? And she said, it's absolutely amazing. Now that she's thinking about it as choreography and as a dancer, we have a different way of looking at time and space and how things unfold. And she said, now I begin to see that there's a certain rhythm, because we're always working with rhythm, and how that rhythm can support us as we go through our day. So when I wake up, my rhythm of the day is like this. You know, that's... But underneath that is this rhythm. I have a flow that's riding underneath that. And before, I only had the... on top, and I didn't have the... So now, I can start my day, which I do with... And then when it's time to rock, I go... And then when I know, now... Okay? There's a rhythm, and there's a play of energy. And the ground bass, in music, there's a ground bass, okay? So you have your ground bass, and then you have all your musical notes, okay, that are going up here. But you have that ground bass down there, okay? Now, if the ground bass is soul, and the soul is that which is moving continuously through everything, regardless of whether you're shoo, 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 or you're... Right? Now, if we play that all together as not necessarily symphonic, but very musically, then that rhythm, that energy that carries you through the day is sublime because your consciousness, yes, you're aware that you have a task to do here and here and here and here, but there is that other thing that's happening that's carrying you quite literally from one task to another. And at the end of the day, I look back over the day and I call it scanning my day. At the end of the day, I look back on my day and I say, have I been true to my being throughout this day? Have I held that energy? And have I been in the being which I am, giving and receiving? And has love been present? Has love been present? When I walk on the beach, I'm in love with everything. I am just in love with everything. Nothing happened on the beach but just love, 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 love. And the same thing is true, I'm finding, as I practice all these things, that there isn't anything. When I get in my car, I go, this is really going to be fun. I'm going to have a really good time going from there to there because I'm in the rhythm of what this is. And however the flow is, I will be with it now. And I used to try to have it speed up because I was late or it was going too slowly and I wasn't really happy with that. So I've given all that up. I said, no, that doesn't work for me. I have to find the way that my being can be fully integrated with my doing. So if this week we were to practice this just for fun and let's say tonight when you go home, and maybe as you're getting ready for bed, you could say, okay, I know exactly what I have to do tomorrow. Everybody knows what they have to do tomorrow, right? Yeah. I'm clear about that, man. I mean, I have to be up at, I was up 4:30 this morning to crank through this whole day because it was a really big day. So maybe I could set my alarm for like 5:15 and still be good. And then I could just start moving that energy and feeling what that flow is and doing every single thing I have to do. And these are time frames, yes? Just like the notes in a piece of music. You have to hit the note at the right time, which means at 12 o'clock, we have to be there. We can't be late, because that's the deal. And then at 1:30, this is happening, and at 2 o'clock, this is happening. Do you know what I'm saying? And how to be able to hold that and have your being be present. Now, my knowing is, and from my own experience, once you begin to feel the rhythm that works for you, and the being is flowing, things happen in what I call the sweet ease. There's a sweet ease that occurs. And there's not anxiety, there's not frustration, there's not any of that. Because you're feeling, rather than doing, that energy of what is the purpose of that moment and how you are the soul of that place. Today I've been the soul of a variety of places, and I've had to drive from one point to another to be the soul of that place, and I want to maintain that soul energy while I'm going from point A to point B, do I not? I don't want to lose it. So tonight you could say, okay, I know my schedule for tomorrow, and I might even remember one or two things that Mary said. I don't have to remember all of them, but maybe I could just say, okay, let me see what the rhythm of this day is and how I may be the soul of the place where I stand every single moment. And if I forget about it, that's all right, because when it comes again, I'll go, oh, I see, soulfulness. I will be the soul of this place and then the soul of this place. The first time I ever had to do hospital duty was very, very difficult, a very difficult situation. And because my sister had been in the hospital, I was very used to being what I call doing hospital duty. And I was an adult now, and I was going into this situation. And before I entered the hospital, I said, please let me be the soul of this place. And as I walk down these corridors, and as I go into this room to be with this beloved individual, may I hold the soul of this place. And if I can bring comfort, I will. And I will do that which I am called to do, and yet I don't want to lose being the soul of this place. And so it was quite an amazing experience. I did not enter into it with what will I do, but rather how will I be? How will I be? And whatever I'm called to do, I will know what to do, because I'd been so well trained as a young child, having to be in hospitals with my sister, that I knew how and what to do. And it was a very different experience for me. I was able to feel my heart open and hold everybody in that hospital, on every floor, in every room, regardless of whether they were just being born or getting ready to pass over, whether they were in recovery or going into an operation. It didn't make any difference what it was. I could actually feel the being that I was and the being of every single person in that hospital, and every doctor and every nurse and everyone. And it was extraordinary for me, because I hadn't realized that it's already waiting for us. All we have to do is step into the energy of being. The being is always awaiting us. It is only we who have to step into it. Do you understand? It is always there. We are not the only ones that are it if we bring it into our consciousness. As I say, everything awaits us, and we simply step into it if we choose. But you have to have the consciousness to be able to do that. You have to recognize that that's what you're doing as you go through your life, however your life happens to be. So I recommend this as an opportunity for greater opening and greater awareness in how we live and how we move and have our being upon the earth plane. The first time I heard that statement, to move and have your being upon the earth plane, I thought, wow, that would be an extraordinary thing to be able to have that as the way I would like to be on the earth plane. And so my practices have been to draw from the things that I love so that they can support me and allow greater opening for the experiences that are in my world, and also that I feel within myself a connectedness, connected to everything that is, not being separated from anything. I was not taught that. I had to learn that. I was taught we're very separate. They're over there, and we're over here. And Shelley is separate from me. And the first time I heard it, actually, no, you're not separate from Shelley. You and Shelley are one. And I went, now how can that be? Because look at this separation here. The belief that we are separate comes from the ego. It does not come from the soul. What connects us is our souls. You see, Shelley and I, our souls are intertwined. Every one of us, our souls are intertwined. And we're constantly in that place. But the ego says, how can that be? Look at that space. Louise, you're way over there. There's a separation in here, isn't it? But the truth is, no, that's an illusion. The truth is that her being and my being, our souls, are just having this really, really beautiful time. And even when she goes down to Ventura, right? She's going to go down to Ventura, and I'm going to stay here. And it would appear that she is way long gone, and there's this huge, big separation. But the truth is, if you truly, truly are living in being, there's never any separation. I will go with her, and she will go with me. And our connectedness will be there. And we will think of one another. And the moment we do, it's like an electric charge will pass. Now, she may not necessarily feel that I'm thinking of her, nor if she thinks of me, will I necessarily feel hers. But the fact that I have thought of her means that in the consciousness we carry, we're communicating with one another. And, you know, they say mental telepathy. I believe the souls are always in mental telepathy. I think our souls are constantly communicating with everybody who is in our world, both in form and formlessness. When you think, my mom and dad have passed over, when I think of either my mother or my father, I feel their energy immediately. Do you not feel that? Have you not had that experience? Yes, I immediately feel their presence. So I do not feel that they are separate from me, even though they are in the formless now. So I am continually and consciously working with everyone that I've ever known on the earth plane, and many who are on the other side who have already left, and many who are coming in, who are just being born. So this nature of being is very, very extraordinary and goes way beyond just what we're talking about here. But I'd like to start from this point and then just let it, you know, expand out into what is the totality of what we are, our potential is. So when I am brushing my teeth in the morning, you know, I could just be brushing my teeth. But I decided that with everything that I'm doing, I really want to know what the being of that is, and so that I can add that to it. So when I'm drinking water, I am honoring that that water is nourishing me and cleansing me and refreshing me, and that its being has now become one with my being as I drink that water. I brush my teeth. I thank the toothbrush. I thank the toothpaste. I thank the water. I thank everything. I thank the little teeth, you know. I mean, it becomes a way of life to honor what that is. And I've given this example in other classes that I've taught. And maybe tonight when you go home, you might want to do it. We're going to wash our hands right now, okay? So everybody get your hands ready. Okay, and you just want to turn the water on. Okay, and just turn the other one on too if you got a two, so you get the right tempi. Okay, now just take your hands and put it on the water. Just feel that water running over your hands. Oh boy, doesn't that feel great. Okay, now you got some soap. Now you may have a bar of soap, you may have one of those push jowers. I've got a bar of soap, so. And I just take that and get your hands all nice and soapy. All right, good. Okay, put that thing back over there. Now I'm going to stick them back under the water. Oh, boy, doesn't that feel good. And just let that water run over the hands like that. There you go. There you go. You're being very conscious of this. Okay, and then I sort of go through my hands so that I can turn these two little guys off that I have. Then I have my towel over here, and I take my towel and say, oh, I'm just so glad you're here because now I need to have dry hands. So I'm drying my hands really well. I want to be sure it doesn't run down to my elbows, which often it does. And then I take my cloth and I put it right back over there wherever it came from. Now, if we did everything with that level of consciousness, our lives would change in a heartbeat. But most of the time, while I'm doing this, I'm doing three other things, at least. All right? I'm thinking about this, and then what about that, and then that over there, and I think, you know, and I'm still doing this little job, but I've lost all consciousness because it's just an automatic response of what? Doing. This was just pure doing. But while we had to mime it, there was a whole other level there about what's really going on here that we want to appreciate and have a consciousness around. And when you're cold, aren't you glad that you have your jacket? And when you're hot, aren't you glad that you can take it off? And when you're this and when you're that, it's only in those moments where the exterior world calls to us and says, we're cold, we're hot, we're hungry, we're this, we're that, that we begin to have a level of consciousness about that particular activity. Most of the time, we just simply are on another track. We are not in being, darlings. We're all about something else. Now, if just we in this circle said, all right, this week, maybe even if it's just once a day, we're going to have complete being about one thing that we're going to do. And maybe even two or three if we, I mean, I get such a kick out of doing it that I do it a lot, but just start with one a day. And at the end of the day, if you didn't do it, say, okay, I'm going to sleep with my being. Just fall asleep with your being, you know? Whatever it is that can begin to expand how you are in the world so that your doing becomes refreshed and your being really begins to flow out of you effortlessly. Yes? There's something very effortless when you're in being. I can only tell you from my own experience that when I started moving with being, everything became in the sweet ease. And if it wasn't, if I had to effort, then I said, wait a minute, you're not in being. Stop. Come into being. And now begin the task again, or whatever it is that you are doing. And then watch how it flows in a very, very different way. Okay? So we're talking about that which is form. Here is the task. I've got the task to do. And the formless, which is your being, that you bring into the task that you're about. Now, I'm an artist, and several of you who are in this group, you're also artists. And you know that when you're in the act of creation, the being guides perfectly what the doing is. You know, it's just unbelievable. We have the canvas, the space, the whatever, you know, whatever words, whatever your form is as an artist. And it is the being that stirs us to create. And then we take whatever the form is that we're using, and the form almost feels like it creates itself. It goes from one to the other to the other, and we go, how did that happen? You know, it's like, for me, sometimes it's just a miracle when I watch what's been created. I go, I never thought it would be that. You know, I knew I was going in a direction, but I didn't know it was going to be that, because the being so beautifully guided it into what was really supposed to happen. This dancer I was telling about earlier, she used to laugh and say, if someone gave me a twig, a string, a ball of mud, and a marble, any four objects, she said, I could take them, transform them, and make them into a piece of art. Because her being would know how to take those elements. It wouldn't make a difference what the elements are. She said, because I just know how to do that. I said, of course you do. And I know how to do that with human bodies. Just give me a human body, I can make that human body work in that space, folks. You know, I know how to do that. So it is how the elements of your life can be fulfilled with the energy of being. You know? Some people feel their lives are very sterile, kind of empty and not really rich and yummy. And my perception is that when you come into the nature of being, it enriches everything that you do because you are bringing L-O-V-E into everything you do. And what is the feeling aspect of love? Joy. So if you do not have joy in your life, you do not have love in your life. And if you don't have love in your life, it means you don't have being flowing through everything that you do. Because when someone says to me, I mean, I do not like to wash the dishes. I did that all my life as a kid. I wash the dishes. So I don't want to wash a dish. I don't. I really don't. But I have to, because that's the way it goes. You have to wash the dishes. So, okay. I go to the sink. I say, I'm going to wash these dishes. And I have a wonderful husband. A lot of times he says, I'll do it, Mary. I know. I said, okay. Thank you very much. But when it's time to wash the dishes, I say, okay. I'm going to bring my being to this task. Because I never did as a kid. So I bring my being to it, just as we did with our hands. I bring the being to every glass, every fork, every knife, every spoon, every plate. And I see it for what it is, the beauty of it and the shape of it and the line and the design and the whatever it is. And I acknowledge, okay, you're just working with beauty here, Mary. So get a grip. Just because they look like dishes and you have an attitude toward dishes, don't forget what's really going on here, which is the aspect of the beauty that's there, and you get to touch it and feel it and be with it. And the being with it is so important. So I honor that in every aspect of our lives, there are those very precious moments when we have the ahas, yes? Those ahas that take us to a whole new level of whatever it is that we're doing in our world. And I hope that tonight, as you go home and perhaps you contemplate for a few moments while you're driving down the road, that in this week you could create a couple of ahas for yourself by bringing the being into the doing and have that little aha, that remembrance of something so beautiful that there's joy. And when there's joy, there's love. And you say, ah, I see. This was a moment filled with love, and I've been missing it because I haven't been present in my being in that moment. But the moments that are already beautiful for you, walking on the beach, being with animals, whatever it is that you have, your children, everything, you know what that love is. You know what that joy is. And then often we just turn around and whoosh, that door shuts and we're doing the doing again. But there's no being, that loving consciousness that will follow it wherever we go. So I honor that in each of us there awaits an even greater blossoming of the love which we are, and our soul awaits us unceasingly to accompany us wherever we are. And it accompanies us even if we have no recognition of that. But to have the recognition that the soul is accompanying us every moment is such a beautiful thing. And it feels, I can only speak for myself, it feels so clear, so resonating in everything that I do. And as I breathe, I can feel that presence. And even with looking through these eyes, I feel the presence, you know. There isn't anything. I just look at any part of my body and say, look at this miracle. We're just living this miraculous consciousness in form. People say to me, why do we re-embody all the time? I said, because it's such a hoot to be here once you get what's going on. But if you don't get it, it is a drudge. You say, I cannot believe I'm back at the body again. You get it, didn't you, right? It is going to be a drudge if you don't get what's going on here. And we keep coming back to get it. So we could get it now or get it later. I say, why don't we get it now? We'll all have a really good time. We will absolutely manifest the being. And then when we depart this form and we go to the other side, we can decide, do you want to come back again or not? Because if you've been here and truly been present and truly been in being, then you will have accomplished why you came into the embodiment. You'll have done that. You just put a little check mark, huh? This embodiment did real good, got it, okay? And sometimes, because we did get it, we say, let us come again, and let us come in different formats, in different levels of consciousness, in different ways, and see if we can bring the being in that form, in that way, in that embodiment. I have another lifetime that's going on simultaneously with this one. And I've met several people who also have this going on. It's a feminine being. And she's having a really good life over there, and I'm having a really good life. But sometimes, and this is quite strange, at the end of the day, I'll say, now, who just had that experience? You know the one I had around 12 noon today? Was that me or was that her over there? Because sometimes I really don't know, but it doesn't make any difference because she's having a really good time and I'm having a really good time. These extraordinary energies that we carry and that we become accustomed to in our world, we don't even realize how miraculous it is. Just the fact that I can close my fist, y'all closed your fist, and now just open your hand. That's a miracle. Right there, folks. It is unbelievable that we can just do this, and then we can do that. And we do it in the sweet ease. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me. Often, I just look at my feet and I go, the amount of miles that these feet have danced, and they can still go in a pair of shoes. I go, unbelievable. Our bodies are so incredible. And we chose every single one of the bodies that we're in now specifically to help us do what? Enter the being. To have the being come into this form and to see how would that be if we lived our life in this form and the being came through this form, how would that be? How would that feel? How would the life unfold? And we're all at a place that we're sitting in this room together, which means that we've come far enough to recognize the difference between being and doing, and we would now like to merge those in such a beautiful way that love is that which carries us forward now, that we feel that that love is which moves us from this moment to that moment, and that each one of those moments is very precious, and that our consciousness is ever expanding, so that we are not limited to things around us that say, oh no, it can't look like that. We say, actually, it can look like that. Because we know the truth of what's going on here in terms of who we are in our being and who we are in our doing. So is this pretty clear? Have I been clear tonight? Sometimes people say, well, how can the soul be everywhere all the time? Because it is divine, and the divine is everywhere all the time. So we are not outside the divine at any moment. The divine is everywhere all the time. And in every single cell, every molecule, and if we had an atomic microscope and we could look at the tiny, teeniest little particle, that tiny, teeny little particle would be absolute light. We're all light beings. That absolute light is in every single cell of our body. And we are part of this light consciousness that is everywhere. And that light consciousness is an expression of the divine. So we are continually holding that potential within us. Okay? Does that make sense to you, everybody? This is not far out, it's far in. You have to go very far in to find it because it's there. And once you realize that, then you can begin to say, I see one of the reasons I'm an embodiment again. I'm an embodiment because I am embodying this light. I'm embodying this love. I'm embodying this truth. And as a result, something else can happen. I'd like to make the calls. I call now for the light of the divine to create a perfect circle of love, light, peace, and joy around all who are present here in the physical and also on the inner planes. I wish to acknowledge and give thanks for all souls who gather to be with us, whether in or out of embodiment, and for the radiance in which we find ourselves. Thank you. I call now for the infilling and indwelling of the divine within all of our bodies, planes, and cells. I acknowledge and give thanks for this and for the divine consciousness that is available to us 24 hours a day, unceasingly. Thank you. I call now that we enter into the serene center of our being within our hearts, and there we enter the silence, allowing ourselves to fall more deeply still in love with the divine which we are. Thank you. I open my heart, and I bring you, Mother, beloved Mother Earth, Gaia, into my heart. Thank you, Mother, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love, which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you, Mother, for nurturing us and loving us through each and every one of our embodiments. Thank you, Mother. I love you. And I open my heart and I bring you, beloved elementals of earth, air, fire, and water into my heart. Thank you, beloved elementals, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you, dear elementals, for your union and communion with Mother Earth and your union and communion within every cell of our physical body. For without you, we could not exist upon the earth plane. Thank you, dear ones. I love you. And I open my heart and I bring the whole of humanity into my heart. Thank you, beloved souls. All souls who are in the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. All souls who are leaving the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And all souls who are coming into the embodiment now, thank you. I love you. And to my soul, thank you. I love you. Thank you, dear beloved souls, for the exquisite manifestation of divine love, which is expressing in you, through you, and as you. Thank you, dear ones. I love you. And I call now that we allow the divine which we are to gently open our eyes. In the last series of the calls around humanity, I would invite all of us, if we would choose to do it, you don't have to do it, but it's wonderful to take a moment each day to acknowledge all the souls. So I call it the whole of humanity. And it doesn't make any difference what costume they chose to come in this time, you see. The soul comes to be the being in every single individual on the earth plane. And when this call was given to me, I was very grateful because I wanted to be able to hold all of humanity, not from the egoic point of view, but from the soul point of view. And so the divine gave me the words of acknowledging the whole of humanity. Then all the souls who are in the embodiment now, regardless of where they are, who they are in the costume that they have created to come in, but as soul, all souls who are in the embodiment now, and then all the souls that are leaving the embodiment now. I am what I call myself, a gatekeeper on the inner planes, and I am aware of the passage of souls coming in and going out continuously. And it is always in motion, the souls who are leaving and the souls who are coming in. So I honor the souls who are leaving the embodiment, and then I honor all the souls who are coming into the embodiment, so that that circle of the being continually renewing itself, both in form and formlessness. And if we allow ourselves to hold that and acknowledge that, it means that who we are in being is then held even more in the sacred within our consciousness, because this is part of our service, that we would bless all souls, regardless of, as I say, what is the costume? What is the costume that they'll put on this time? And I acknowledge that often we fall into judgment if that is a costume that we don't particularly, we've been told, that's not a good costume. You don't like those costumes over there, but you love these costumes over here. So, by allowing ourselves to honor the passage of the souls through the coming in and the being present and then the leaving again, we then acknowledge the souls who are here on the earth plane. And each one has come in to do whatever it is that is their soul agreement to do. And I honor that again. The egos have created such division and such separation and such beliefs that this belief is okay and this belief is not, that often we forget that each of these souls has come to do their very particular work, and that we have said we would acknowledge that the souls have come to do that. And however that plays out is however that plays out. But our hearts are open to all of it, to every soul, whatever the situation.